This is Capital Correspondent. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org, filling in for Carmen Russell Sluchansky as we continue with our May Day special. We now turn to school reform and school closures, both here in D.C. and in New York City. Joining us in studio is Candy Peterson, a social worker with D.C. Public Schools, former vice president of the Washington Teachers Union, and a blogger at the Washington Teacher. Joining us on the phone are two guests. Nils DeVita is a New York City public school teacher and a delegate with the United Federation of Teachers. And on the line from Seattle is James Booten, who has taught in public schools in both D.C. and New York, and is now a public school teacher in Seattle and blogging it in Urban Teachers Education. Welcome to all of you.
Hi, Pete. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you.
Great to have all of you with us. Well, it seems the announcement of school closures has become almost an annual event. In D.C., Mayor Vincent Gray and Schools Chancellor Kaya Henderson commissioned a report which called for turning around or closing 38 public schools, turning at least some of them into charters. Interestingly, the report was paid for by the Walton Foundation. But I wanted to begin not in D.C., but in New York, where Mayor Michael Bloomberg is attempting to close 26 public schools. Nils DeVita, what are your thoughts on this latest round of school closures? And I guess at this point, there are attempted school closures, and it's not a done deal.
Well, it's really devastating to these communities. New York City is a huge place, of course, with over a million students. So, by the way, they're going to close 28 schools, but now it's 26. What's so sad is that the community has no say in it, and the teachers have no say in it. This is done, you know, through the government, the city government, and with turnaround grants. So what I just think is so devastating is the communities. These schools are trying. Some of them have improved. It's just a sad situation. We have no voice in it.
Candy Peterson, this sounded all familiar, a lack of community voice in the decision-making process regarding school closures.
We're pretty much facing the same thing here in D.C. With the IFF study, in which the study was, as you stated, funded by the Walton Foundation and by this group who is pro-charter, with the community, parents, teachers being left out of the decision-making process. And our concern is that these people have come in from Chicago, many of whom have not visited the schools that they've recommended. I think it's 38 school closures during next school year. And parents, there have been no focus groups. There have been no parental involvement, and parents have really been left out of getting information about how this, you know, the study was conducted, as well as the fact that they're only looking at standardized test scores, you know, to show improvement. And here in D.C., many of our schools that will be recommended for closure are in the poorest wards, such as 7 and 8. I think Ward 7 has 10 schools slated to be closed, and Ward 8 has 16 schools, and it's disproportionate to the rest of this, to the more affluent areas. Of course, Ward 3, one of the most affluent areas in D.C., has no schools slated to be closed.
Nils DeVita, do you see a similar thing where schools in the wealthier areas are less likely to be closed down?
Yeah, it goes beyond that, but as we'll always hear, the biggest determining factor of a student's education is actually income. So poor students are hit the worst, but this is the big thing that's not being said. The fact that all of this comes out of these school closures, turnaround grants, mostly come out of No Child Left Behind. So that means a new immigrant that came yesterday, you know, to America and they took a test today, that's counted, an English and a math score. Special ed students who don't, again, in poorly funded districts. So across the board, it's only as the lady, the teacher in Washington said, it's only about tests and usually disproportionately affecting poorer students.
I had a chance to ask Mayor Gray and Schools Chancellor Kaya Henderson about the school closures. They announced their 5-year strategic plan and didn't mention anything about school closures, but I want to play a clip of the question that I asked and the response from Mayor Vincent Gray.
We're going to take two more questions. I'm going to take you first, Peter, and then we'll come back to you, Bill.
I know the IFF study that was recently commissioned said, I think it was 38 schools were possibly going to be closed and maybe turned into charters. Where does that fit into the plan?
Well, let me start. We will be back at you in a matter of weeks to talk about the closing of schools. You know, and I've said it at every one of these budget town hall meetings, and I hope people are listening. what we have is unsustainable. We now have 76,000 students in public education in the city. We have 77,000. We have 46,000 in D.C. public schools, 31,000 in charters. When you put all the buildings together, when you put the D.C. public school buildings together with the charters, we now have about 220 buildings. Just do the math on that. It's not sustainable. And what's interesting is that virtually every town budget town hall meeting we've conducted, somebody will stand up and talk about the ancillary services that they would like to see in schools. There's no way to do that because the dollars just simply aren't there. We are going to have to consolidate the number of schools that we educate our children in the District of Columbia, and ultimately it will redound to the benefit of every child and every family in this city. People have very nostalgic, emotional ties to schools in the city. I'm a product of the D.C. public schools, and so I think fondly, too, of the schools that I went to. But I think even more fondly of what is important now, and that is, what are we going to do for the children who are yet to go through our schools and hopefully will go through our schools? So while we're not prepared today to talk precisely about how we're going to do that, it is right in the middle of the radar screen, and we'll be back in a few weeks with how we're going to accomplish that.
For the full questioning of Mayor Vincent Gray and Schools Chancellor Kaya Henderson, you can go to thefightback.org. I want to bring James Booten into the conversation in a minute, but Candy Peterson, I wanted to get your response. Mayor Gray said that in the not-too-distant future, he's going to be laying out how he's going to go about closing schools, and he offered some of the justifications for doing so.
Well, his argument, as well as Chancellor Henderson's argument, is that they do not have the monies to fund the number of schools. We have many schools that are under-enrolled, and in order to make the changes that they want to make and make improvements, their argument is that we have to close these schools so that they have the money to fund the improvements. But many people question that, and even even if we realize, I think we all realize that we may have to close some schools, why then is the community not a part of the process? The parents, the teachers, the school staff, why is this done kind of behind closed doors? And then we'll just discuss it with you later. So I think that we question this study that has been done, and we're not suggesting that schools shouldn't be closed, but that there should be a valid study done, and it should be a process in which the community, the parents, and educators should be involved along the way.
That's the voice of Candy Peterson, who's a DCPS social worker in District of Columbia Public Schools. I want to bring James Booten into the conversation as we look at the public schools in the school system in D.C. and New York. James, you've taught in both systems and are now out in Seattle. You have a very interesting story to tell. Having experienced both of these systems, having experienced school reform as it's currently being enacted, can you lay out your story and some of your thoughts on what's taking place?
Sure, yeah. So I taught in D.C. for a year, and then I moved to New York, and I worked there for a little while. And I agree with everything that Mills and Candy have said so far. It's sort of like when it rains, it pours, especially for students that go to underprivileged schools and impoverished communities. All of the things are acting against them. Not only do a lot of students who attend these schools come from families with not a lot of educational support or background, they also often they come from families who speak a different language at home. They don't have the knowledge about what it means to go through school or go to college. Oftentimes they lack the behavioral supports to attend school in the way that our society puts people through school. And then on top of that, now we're closing schools in New York and D.C. without, like Candy was saying, the support from parents and students and teachers or the communication involved with that. And this is just one more thing that I think is really negatively impacted the education of poor and minority students in both of these cities and across the country as well.
And James, why aren't you teaching in D.C. where I met you, and then you headed to New York, and when I got in touch with you for this interview, found out you're no longer in New York. What has caused you not to find a teaching home in either of these two cities?
Well, what I found, I teach in the state of Washington now, where I had taught prior to moving to Washington, D.C. What I found teaching in Washington, D.C. and in New York City is the level of politicking and corruption at the at the upper reaches of government and in the education and the schools is so high that I just didn't feel like it was a good place for me to be. In Washington State, there's a little bit more community involvement. We don't allow charter schools in this state yet, and the corporate sort of takeover of public schools has not manifested itself here the way that it has in New York City and in Washington, D.C. I think teachers are treated with a lot more respect out here, and I can talk to my principal or other teachers without feeling like I have to jump through a game of words and politics to get my meaning across. So that's why I'm not in New York or D.C. anymore.
Nils DeVita, if you want to weigh in with any comment here, and I also want you to talk about how I met you. You were wearing a Superman outfit. Why was that?
Oh, yeah. That was a few years ago. We pretty much have our annual, you know, demonstrations or marches in Washington. And we were protesting, actually, waiting for Superman. I was wearing my Superman outfit, and I met you. And just basically, you know, my feeling, I really... question is a little bit general, but maybe I'll just say something about, charter schools or any choice of school. Basically, and I'm not speaking from the union's point of view, I'm speaking from my point of view. I'm for the kids as well, you know, number one. So what's best for the kids, let's just keep that in mind, we want. And I'm not saying schools shouldn't be closed, there should be school closed, or, you know, should be closed, or there should be charter or not charter. If something works, I'm actually for it. And, you know, I come from that point of view. But as the teacher in Washington says, that's so true. I mean, it just seems like the levels and levels of politics, who really knows how things are really decided? And that's kind of, I'm teaching 24 years. For teachers, it's just so frustrating. And I think that, you know, we really think about the biggest victim here. It's the child. And, you know, I'm for what's right for a child, community decisions with parents, with collaboration, and with the government, and with the mayor, and with all the chancellors and all those people. And that's, I guess, the frustrating thing is it's so big. In New York City, it's so big. We're kind of far from any sort of, you know, collaboration.
Nils DeVita, what are class sizes like in New York? We just have a couple minutes. Well, we got 4.5 minutes left.
Well, officially 34. They could go over and we file grievances. You know, 34 is a pretty big thing, you know. And just to let you know something about school closure, I'll really get to it quickly. When they say small schools, because that's really their ultimate goal, in New York City, the schools are very big. So, but they don't mean small class sizes. So it means a smaller school. And usually, you know, not always, but 34 students as well. So I think the biggest problem is smaller classes, not smaller schools or even closing schools, if that's even necessary.
Candy Peterson, what are some of the class sizes you're seeing here in D.C.?
Well, I think it varies, but with the new budget proposal for next year, one of the things that we'll be facing are larger class sizes. We'll also, you know, it's like we've been set up to fail. Our budgets have been undercut in our enrollment projections. They're not accurate. And so, like, for example, at my school, Cardoza, we're losing 22 staff next year. And so we'll have more students in a class, obviously, like up to 26. And we're also having to pay for bonuses out of our own budgets. And basically... what has happened is they are, you know, I want to say they're setting us up to fail so that they can say, hey, look, we told you they couldn't do it. And they will make the argument that let's turn it over to the charter school operators because they can do a better job. And we know that so far from the truth, there's just not the research out there to support. And we already have that in D.C. in some schools where the charters, I think, have taken over places like Dunbar and Anacostia. And in Dunbar Senior High School, it did not work. But it's just a tragedy. This is really privatization of public education. I think we're seeing across the country. It's Chicago. I mean, all the major cities are facing it.
James Booten, I want to get your final thoughts.
So far everything Mills and Candy have said is I agree with. And as you were saying, it's happening all over the country. It's happening out here in Seattle as well. So it's sad, and I just go back to the it rains, it pours thing. This is just more problems that poor and minority communities have to deal with that they shouldn't have to.
That's James Booten, who has taught both in D.C. and New York and is now in Seattle, and he is blogging at an Urban Teachers Education. We have lost Nils DeVita, but I want to thank him for joining on, a New York City public school teacher. Candy Peterson, we have an extra minute. Can you talk about your situation right now and any final thoughts that you want to care to share?
I was elected as the General Vice President of Washington Teachers Union. I was summarily dismissed without due process hearing, and I am awaiting arbitration in July and so that a final decision could be made by an arbitrator of whether or not my dismissal was legal. And hopefully I will win that, the arbitration.
Any final thoughts you care to share in this last minute? And thanks for joining us.
I think people should stay tuned. We're here in D.C. We're going to, there are groups that are getting together, Empower D.C., D.C. Voice, SHAPE, and other groups. Thursday, May 3rd, 5:30 to 8 at the Dorothy Height Benning Road Neighborhood Library, 3835 Benning Road Northeast, from 5:30 to 8 to a continued discussion about school closures. We hope the community will come out and join us.
Thank you, Candy Peterson, a DCPS social worker. Thanks, Nils DeVita, New York City public school teacher. And thanks, James Booten, out in Seattle. This has been Capital Correspondent, a May Day special. Join us Thursday as we find out what Occupy DC has been up to in the wake of its forceful eviction in February. Filling in for Carmen Russell-Sluchansky, I'm Pete Tucker.